Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. In my humble opinion, leftovers are a very good thing, and I hope you like them too. Today's program is full of leftovers. A few articles from recent programs that I just didn't have time to read. Too good to throw away, still pretty fresh, and still very useful. You'll hear about an inventor who was blind, artificial intelligence, uncommon eye diseases, and a couple of good dog stories. First of all, that inventor. This is about Samuel Janensky. He was mentioned briefly recently, and I thought I needed to know more about him. This comes from Wikipedia. It starts with an introduction. Samuel Janensky, 1927 to 2009, was an American computer scientist, best known as an inventor of devices to assist sight-impaired persons. He was also well known for his advocacy on behalf of people who are blind. His early life and career. When Janensky, I better spell his last name for you, Samuel Janensky, G-E-N-E-N-S-K-Y. So we continue. When Janensky was born in New Bedford, Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts had a requirement that all newborn babies receive drops of dilute silver nitrate in both eyes. This was to prevent the possible passage of syphilis from mother to child. He received the required drops. Unfortunately, the chemical had not been diluted, and both of his eyes were badly burned. 3 months later, he was treated by Dr. Frederick Verhoef, a highly regarded specialist in ophthalmology, who performed partial iridectomy on both eyes, thinking that glaucoma would otherwise occur. The result of the burns and the iridectomies was complete loss of vision in Janensky's left eye and near blindness in his right eye. The best vision test he ever achieved was 20 over 1,000. Samuel Janensky received elementary schooling grades 1 through 8 at the Sylvia Ann Howland School in New Bedford, Massachusetts. He used special classes geared to visually impaired children. When he applied to attend high school at New Bedford High School, he was directed to the Perkins Institute for the Blind instead. This is located nearby in Watertown, Massachusetts. He attended Perkins for 1 year, 1940 to 1941, where he learned Braille. At the end of that year, he applied again to attend the regular high school in his hometown, and this time he was accepted. The previous superintendent had left, and the acting superintendent's sister had been Janensky's teacher at his elementary school, the Howland School. So after high school, Janensky entered Brown University in 1945. He graduated with a BS degree in physics. He entered Harvard University in 1950, and he received an MS degree in mathematics in 1951. After this, he worked for the U.S. Bureau of Standards as a mathematician in the Fire Protection Section of the Building Technology Division. Janensky returned to Brown University in 1954 and received a Ph.D. in Applied Mathematics in 1958. At that time, he was hired by the RAND Corporation, and he became a member of the senior staff in its mathematics department. In 1976, the Santa Monica Hospital invited Janensky to come to the hospital and create a center dedicated to assisting visually impaired persons to remain or become an integral part of overall society. He, along with two colleagues, did make the move, and in 1978, what's called the Center for the Partially Sighted began providing services as part of the hospital's operations. It became an independent organization in April of 1983. The next section of the article from Wikipedia is talking about the development of sight-assisting devices. In his 1 year at Perkins, Janensky quickly learned Braille, but he also continued to read regular printed materials and to write with pens. One teacher told him, "Why don't you act like a well-behaved blind child?" To which he replied, "Because I'm not blind." He remarked later that this retort had significant importance in his life because by it, he permanently placed himself in the camp of the sighted and not in the camp of the blind. And at that point, he determined to make it in life using, as he said, everything he had going for him, including his none-too-impressive residual vision. Now, looking back, during his first year at that regular high school, Janenski took his father's World War I binoculars to his geometry class, and he realized he could use these binoculars to identify circles and triangles on the blackboard. He continued to use them. He was encouraged by his teacher to do so. And shortly afterward, he was encouraged by Dr. Kenneth Ogle at the Dartmouth Eye Institute to place a 3.5 diopter lens on the left objective lens of these bifocals, of these binoculars. This created a giant bifocal system, which allowed him to see the blackboard through the right side and then use the left side to write down what he had seen. He used this system throughout the rest of his schooling and also while employed at the Bureau of Standards and at the Rand Corporation. While at Brown University, he asked for one concession due to his limited vision, that he be allowed to take his tests in a room that had good lighting, with a chair and desk of acceptable height. He demanded that the times allowed for his testing be the same as those for the other students. While working at the Rand Corporation, a coworker whose name is Paul Baran, that's B-A-R-A-N, a coworker found Janenski slumped over an inclined drawing board while writing a company project. Baran remarked that he said there has to be a better way for you to read and write. Janenski agreed and asked Baran to help him find that better way. Eventually, with additional help from other colleagues at the Rand Corporation, also the Aerospace Corporation and the Polaroid Corporation, they designed and built the first practical closed-circuit TV, CCTV, for people who are partially sighted. This was first demonstrated at the December 1968 annual conference of the American Academy of Optometry. And a January 1971 article in Reader's Digest described the system. The headline was titled, Sam Janenski's Marvelous Seeing Machine. The article brought a flood of interest, and this sparked in Janenski a desire to create a center that would provide sight-impaired persons the necessary services to meet their special needs and to encourage them to use all their senses, including any available eyesight, to remain an integral part of the human society. It was this new desire that led him to the Santa Monica Hospital and the eventual establishment of what is called the Center for the Partially Sighted out there in Santa Monica, California. The article in Wikipedia ends with some personal information. Sam Janenski was born into a Jewish family and remained active in the American Jewish community for his entire life. He was married twice, first to a woman named Marion Malis Janenski, M-A-L-I-S, Marion Malis Janenski, and she died. And then he was married again to Nancy Kronig, C-R-O-N-I-G. And they had two children with his first wife and four stepchildren from Nancy's previous marriage. In 1990, a cataract operation dramatically improved the vision in his right eye. And at this point, he was stunned to realize that his wife, Nancy, was a redhead and not a brunette, as he had assumed for his entire marriage. But the improvement in his eye was short-lived, and he was soon using Braille again. Janenski was inaugurated into the California Governor's Hall of Fame for people with disabilities. He received a Doctor of Humane Letters honorary degree from the Illinois College of Optometry. He received the Miguel Award from the American Foundation for the Blind. He also received the Carl Koch Award from the American Optometric Association. His name is inscribed on a brick in the Museum of the American Printing House for the Blind's Wall of Tribute in Louisville, Kentucky. Janenski was proud of an achievement which he claims helps vision-impaired daily while negotiating public areas. He encouraged supervisors of California's public buildings to add raised, circular, or triangular-shaped markings to restroom doors, so by touch, a person can determine which restroom is for which gender. Samuel Janensky died at his Santa Monica home on 26th of June in 2009. He died of complications from heart disease. Sam was survived by his wife Nancy, his two daughters, three stepchildren, as well as three grandchildren. The next article is titled, Google Research Shows How AI Can Make Ophthalmologists More Effective. A study shows that together, AI and physicians can improve eye care. This article was published in March of this year. The source was the American Academy of Ophthalmology. As you know, AI stands for artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, AI. AI continues to evolve, diagnosing disease faster and potentially with greater accuracy than physicians. Some have suggested that technology may soon replace tasks that physicians currently perform. But a new study from the Google AI Research Group shows that physicians and algorithms, AI, working together are more effective than either one alone. It's one of the first studies to examine how AI can improve physicians' diagnostic accuracy. This study expands on previous work from Google AI, showing that its algorithm works roughly as well as human experts in screening patients for a common diabetic eye disease called diabetic retinopathy. For their latest study, the researchers wanted to see if their algorithm could do more than simply diagnose disease. They wanted to create a new computer-assisted system that could explain the algorithm's diagnosis. They found that this system not only improved the ophthalmologist's diagnostic accuracy, but it also improved the algorithm's accuracy. More than 29 million Americans have diabetes and are at risk for diabetic retinopathy, a potentially blinding eye disease. People typically don't notice changes in their vision in the disease's early stages, but as it progresses, diabetic retinopathy usually causes vision loss that in many cases cannot be reversed. That is why it's so important that people with diabetes have yearly screenings. Unfortunately, the accuracy of screenings can vary significantly. One study found a 49% error rate among internists, diabetologists, and medical residents. Recent advances in AI, artificial intelligence, promise to improve access to diabetic retinopathy screening and to improve its accuracy. But it's less clear how AI will work in the physician's office or in other clinical settings. Previous attempts to use computer-assisted diagnosis shows that some screeners rely on the machines too much, which leads to repeating the machine's errors, or they might under-rely on it and ignore accurate predictions from the machines. Researchers at Google AI believe some of these pitfalls may be avoided if the computer can explain its predictions. To test this theory, the researchers developed two types of assistants to help physicians read the algorithm's predictions. The first type of assistance is called GRADES, G-R-A-D-E-S, a set of five scores that represent the strength of evidence for the algorithm's prediction. The other type of assistance is called GRADES plus heat map. Heat map, a map of the heat. GRADES plus heat map. This would enhance the grading system with a heat map that measures the contribution of each pixel in the image to the algorithm's prediction. Now, carrying on with this study, 10 ophthalmologists, the 10 consists of four general ophthalmologists, one person who was trained outside the U.S., four retina specialists, and one retina specialist in training. These 10 ophthalmologists were asked to read each image once, under one of three conditions: unassisted, grades only, or grades plus heat map. Both types of assistance improved physicians' diagnostic accuracy. It also improved their confidence in the diagnosis. But the degree of improvement depended on the physician's level of expertise. Without assistance, general ophthalmologists are significantly less accurate than the algorithm. While the retina specialists are not significantly more accurate than the algorithm. With assistance, the general ophthalmologists match but do not exceed the model's accuracy, while the retina specialists started to exceed the model's performance. Here's a quote. "What we found is that artificial intelligence can do more than simply automate eye screening. It can assist physicians in more accurately diagnosing diabetic retinopathy." This is a quote from the lead researcher, Dr. Rory Sayers, S-A-Y-R-E-S. And he continues, "The artificial intelligence and physicians working together can be more accurate than either one alone." Like medical technologies that preceded it, Dr. Sayers said that AI is another tool that will make the knowledge, skill, and judgment of physicians even more central to quality care. "There is an analogy in driving," Sayers said. He said there are self-driving vehicles and there are tools to help drivers. One's called Android Auto. The first is automation, the self-driving vehicles. The second is augmentation. "The findings of our study indicate that there may be space for augmentation in classifying medical images like retinal fundus images. When the combination of clinician and artificial intelligence outperforms either one alone, this provides an argument for up-leveling clinicians with intelligent tools like artificial intelligence." And this again was a quote from the lead researcher in the study, Dr. Rory Sayers. Artificial intelligence. The next article is back from a program of some rare or not as commonly known eye diseases. There are two of them here. One is episcleritis, and then will be followed by retinoblastoma. Episcleritis. I better spell it for you to begin with. This comes from WebMD website, by the way. Episcleritis, E-P-I-S-C-L-E-R-I-T-I-S, episcleritis. This is not particularly rare, but you might not have heard of it recently. Redness in your eye can result from a number of things, from allergies to pink eye or simply being really tired. One common cause is episcleritis, a condition that isn't harmful and often goes away on its own. Episcleritis is an inflammation of the episclera, which is a thin layer of clear tissue on top of the white part of the eye, or the sclera. This is the layer between the thin skin of the eye and the tough wall of the eyeball. When the tiny blood vessels in the episclera get irritated or inflamed, they make your eye look red or bloodshot. It usually happens in just one eye, but can affect both. Though the redness may look like conjunctivitis or pink eye, there is no goopy discharge with episcleritis. There are two types of episcleritis. The first one is simple and the second one is nodular. Simple episcleritis is the most common, and this has two subtitles: sectoral, the redness appears over part of your eye, or diffuse, the redness appears over all of it. This is simple episcleritis. The next type is nodular. This is when a tiny bump or nodule forms on your eye. This kind tends to cause more discomfort. The next section from WebMD covers the causes and the risk factors. Experts don't know exactly what causes it. In most cases, no specific cause can be found. About one-third of people who have it have a condition that affects their entire body. Doctors call this a systemic disorder. This could be something like rheumatoid arthritis or an inflammatory bowel disease, or lupus, or Crohn's disease, or gout, or rosacea, or collagen, or some kind of vascular diseases. Some other possible causes might be medications such as topiramate or pamidronate, or it could also be caused by an injury, perhaps. Certain things make people more likely to get it. It affects women slightly more often than men. It can affect children, but it's most common in adults, especially those between the ages of 40 and 50. Rarely, infections with certain types of bacteria, fungi, or viruses can be the cause. Rarely. The varicella virus, which causes shingles, may be a factor in some cases. In some extremely rare cases, episcleritis has been linked to T-cell leukemia and Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's in very rare cases. Symptoms, often eye redness, will make your diagnosis. Often eye redness is the only symptom, but you might also notice irritation or burning or light sensitivity. Episcleritis doesn't normally hurt, so if your eye is sore or painful, you may have something else. It doesn't usually affect your vision or cause permanent damage to your eyes. If you've had it before, it can come back. It can switch from eye to eye, but it often repeats in the same eye. So your doctor has to make that diagnosis, and they may use a slit lamp, the device that shines light into your eye. The simple type of episcleritis will clear up on its own in a week or 10 days. An eye doctor can give or prescribe some lubricating eye drops to soothe the irritation and the redness. They may also prescribe a non-steroidal inflammatory drug or NSAID, such as ibuprofen. This was from WebMD. It was recently reviewed by Dr. Alan Kozarski. The next disease that's somewhat rare is retinoblastoma. What is it? Retinoblastoma is a type of cancer that forms in the retina, which is the light-sensitive tissue at the back of the eye. How is retinoblastoma treated? Retinoblastoma is a life-threatening disease. However, with early diagnosis and timely treatment, in most cases, a child's eyesight and life can be saved. This is retinoblastoma. And from the Mayo Clinic, a reminder that if you see a white color in the center circle of the pupil of the eye, when light is shown in the eye, such as when taking a flash photograph, this is a tip. This is not something red eye, but it looks like a white eye when you take a picture. This is a reminder to get checked for retinoblastoma. Now we have an article titled, from People magazine, actually, "After Adoption Drama Separated Them, a Blind Dog and a Guide Dog, Best Friends, Finally Find a Home Together." Now I'll let you know a little disclaimer here that I have a blind dog myself, and I happen to be that blind dog's guide person. My little Roxy, a miniature dachshund, has been blind for about 5 or 6 years, so I love this article. This is written by Kelly Bender. OJ, a blind 12-year-old dachshund, and his best buddy Dozier, a pit bull that helps the little canine get around, are giving forever another shot. The pair of pooch pals were brought in together to Richmond Animal Care and Control Center in Virginia by their original owner, who was no longer able to care for them. It was clear to the shelter's staff that this was an inseparable pair. So the agency made it a condition for their adoption that their future pet parents would take both dogs. The shelter thought it had found that person just a few weeks after news of the duo's need for a home spread. But after Dozier and OJ were adopted out, side by side, the blind dachshund was found wandering a rural road alone. The despondent dog was literally lost without Dozier. So the shelter called up the adopter, who claims the dogs were separated accidentally. The adopter was then convinced to return Dozier to the shelter's care, since this person no longer wanted OJ. Now, a month after this adoption drama, Richmond Animal Care and Control has some good news. OJ and Dozier's roller coaster ride of emotion and turmoil is over. They have been adopted to a true forever home. The shelter shared the welcoming news on Facebook, where the announcement has already received over 8,000 likes. Here's a quote, "We are incredibly happy to share that OJ and Dozier were adopted together last night to a wonderful Richmond family. These dogs have taken us on a roller coaster ride of emotion and turmoil, and yet they've remained steadfast in their love for each other and their ability to adapt and overcome vexing circumstances." This was according to the shelter post on Facebook. On Instagram, the shelter also shared that the pair's new parents have created an account for OJ and Dozier. And if you're on Instagram, it's the @ OJ and Dozier, D-O-Z-E-R. So all of their fans can keep track of how much the friends are loving their new life together. In the hope of helping the countless other animals looking for homes who have not received the same media attention as this twosome, The Richmond Animal Care and Control has started a fund in honor of the furry friends to help owners struggling to provide for their pets, to help them find a way to care for them and themselves without having to surrender their animals. Now, maybe just one quick another guide dog story, also from People magazine. Blind Golden Retriever gets his own seeing eye dog and is positively perfect match. After losing both of his eyes to glaucoma, Charlie got some help from a little puppy, Maverick. This was written by Joel Goldstein, published late in March of this year. You've heard of humans having seeing eye dogs, but what about dogs having seeing eye dogs? Meet Charlie, an 11-year-old Golden Retriever. In 2016, Charlie's owners, Adam and Chelsea Stipe, had to get his left eye removed after suffering from glaucoma. A year later, the pup was forced to remove his other eye, causing him to go completely blind. But now, the adorable Golden Retriever has a new pal to help him navigate the world, a 4-month-old puppy named Maverick. The North Carolina couple brought Maverick home in January. And though the two didn't initially get along, they have since become close buddies, with Charlie relying on the puppy for nearly everything, from walking, playing, eating, and even using him as a pillow. Let's see, skipping to the end of the article here, as the dogs began to get comfortable with each other, the owners told NBC Philadelphia that Maverick began to even pick up on Charlie's patterns and routines. Here's a quote. When they would play, Maverick would realize that Charlie would lose the play toy sometimes. So Maverick, the puppy, would go over and pick it up and put it back in front of Charlie to re-engage him in playtime. Since introducing Maverick into their home, the Stipes have created an Instagram account also to document the pup's new life at home together. The first post that introduced the pups, Chelsea and Adam joked that Maverick is here to help Charlie get around, and Charlie is trying to teach Maverick manners. Definitely a work in progress. This was accompanied by an adorable shot of the dog standing side by side looking up at the camera. The rest of the posts on Instagram show the dog playing tug-of-war, napping together, and even posing with their new sibling. And within the first 4 days of the account's creation, Charlie and Maverick have gone viral, and they've accumulated more than 52,000 followers. The quote ends the article, "We have definitely been overwhelmed with the response, but it's such a good thing." To end the program, I have a quote for you today to think about. It's about leftovers, and they say, "It's not the leftovers that are wasteful, but those who either don't know what to do with them or can't be bothered." This was said by Julian Baggini. He is a British philosopher, journalist, and the author of over 20 books about philosophy, including that thought about leftovers. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.